Welcome back to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. The featured speaker at this Saturday's meeting of the Black Hills Veterans Writing Group is retired U.S. Navy Captain James A. Huff. A veteran of the United States Marine Corps, he received a direct commission in U.S. Naval Intelligence in 1968. Concurrent with his Veterans Administration career, he served 28 years as a Naval Intelligence Officer in the Active Reserve, served three tours of active duty. He volunteered for recall to active duty during the first Gulf War and commanded a U.S. Naval Intelligence team. Captain Huff was awarded the Defense Superior Service Medal during the Gulf War. He was injured while on active duty and formally retired from Naval Intelligence in November of 1996. As an intelligence officer, he was involved in several high-profile cases, including the investigation of Chilean arms merchant Carlos Cardon and a scheme selling cluster bombs and other weapons to Iraqi President Saddam Hussein. Also, investigation of sales of sensitive submarine technologies to the Soviet Union. Jim, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you very much for having me.
We only have a couple of minutes here, so I guess we can only touch on a couple of things, but perhaps pique the interest of people to maybe check out and listen to you when you speak to the Veterans Writing Group on Saturday morning. But to begin, how did your career in Naval Intelligence get started?
Well, actually, I was in research in Houston at Baylor Medical School and at the VA. And I was literally recruited off the streets by an old friend of mine. They were looking for specialties, basic scientists, exotic linguists, mathematicians, computer types. And sounded quite interesting. So I said yes, and 2 years later, after a very thorough background investigation, I was commissioned in a Naval Intelligence Unit and affiliated with various units around the nation. I moved 11 times with the VA. But there was an advantage to that in that I would reaffiliate with different units.
So how did that work when you were both with the intelligence and with the VA?
Well, it worked very well because the VA, the government, would allow you military leave for your reserve duty, and you could use your annual leave, and you could use leave without pay. You could move seamlessly between the VA and the Navy. So when opportunities arose, such as they did in 1973 when I volunteered to debrief American POWs coming back from Southeast Asia, when I volunteered, my last volunteering was for Desert Shield, Desert Storm, the VA would have to hold my position open, and they would also have to pay my insurance and consider me for promotion. They didn't have to promote me, but they had to consider me anyway. So it worked out well.
Yeah. Now, one of the cases that you were involved in, we were talking about this yesterday, was looking into the sales of sensitive submarine technology to the Soviet Union. This was in the 1980s. Toshiba and a Norwegian company were involved with this?
Yes. This case was a case that Mike Maluth, the person I worked with during Desert Shield, Desert Storm. Mike is the civilian, was the civilian head of technology security operation. What happened was that a company in Norway that we had contracts with to build computers for our missile system, and a company in Japan, Toshiba, had sold technology to the Soviet Union. And that technology was used with quieting their submarines. What happens with a submarine is that the propellers cause cavitation, they cause noise, and we can identify the Soviet submarines by their noise profile. Well, with this technology that the Norwegians and the Japanese provided the Soviet Union, they could retrofit the propellers on the submarines, so they were extremely quiet. And there's good evidence that the Soviets also provided that technology to China. And it caused Norway and Japan to tighten up their export monitoring. So the bottom line was that this was a major KGB operation. It cost the QSSR $9 million to acquire this technology. However, when the damage assessment was done by the Navy, it cost the Navy and the United States $50 billion to repair the damage. So just in dollars and cents, you can see that technology transfer is a major issue.
In looking at this case, the Toshiba, the Norwegian company, I believe that somewhere along the line there was a French company that was involved as well. How did you go about putting all these pieces together to find out what happened?
Well, that was really Mike's thing, and it's like putting together a puzzle. You can in the intelligence program maybe have 60% of the puzzle, and you can figure out the other 40%. And the way it was done was actually through open sources. In other words, we didn't intercept any cables or anything like that. It was actually done by good analysis work, and I'm going to give Mike all the credit for this. It was his, and it got quite a bit of press, and we're still recovering from it. So,
Recovering from it in what way?
Well, during the peak of the Cold War, we had what are called Socius lines. These are underwater hydrophones strung from Greenland to the UK and connected in Iceland at Keflavik. And when submarines would come down from the Northern Fleet to be stationed off our East Coast, we could pick up the profile of that submarine. We knew what it sounded like, so we could use our aircraft P-3s to follow the sub, locate the sub. We could also have an attack submarine trail the sub. And those boomers, as they're called, they're ballistic submarines, would stay off our coast. Most Americans have no idea that during the height of the Cold War, there were three boomers, three Russian submarines capable of launching interballistic missiles off our coast at all times. Now, what the Soviets didn't know till later was that we also had attack submarines down there with them. And the captains of these attack submarines were authorized to sink the Soviet submarine if they went past a certain stage of arming their missiles. They didn't have to call back to Washington to say, "Mother, may I?" It was just an order. That was after they passed. After they open the hatches and flood the tubes, and all, they get to a certain point, sink them. And so that's the reason you can see that being able to locate these subs was such a crucial matter to us. So now we have to go back and identify the submarines they have out there now and other submarines using new technologies. The Navy is replacing the aircraft, the P-3s, with the P-8s now. They're basically a 737 configured for the military. I probably over-answered your question.
No, that's fascinating. Now, we only have a couple of minutes here, and we probably don't have time to get into the investigation into Carlos Cordon, the Chilean arms merchant, but I'm wondering that connection to the Iraqi president and the question of did the U.S. know about the sales, I'm wondering about, as a Navy intelligence officer, did you have to be removed from politics, or were you removed from the political situations in some of these things that you were investigating?
Oh, we were very much removed from them. We were very cautious about that. We didn't get into the political component. Our job, our mission, when I went back, was to ferret out individuals who had supplied Saddam Hussein with U.S. technology, weapons, and any substrates of war, such as poison gas. That's number one. Number two was to identify the combat capabilities of the weapons and technology. And number three was take appropriate action through legal and military channels to neutralize those technologies and weapons. That was our mission. And that's what we did.
In your experience in naval intelligence and in regards to the selling of arms in some cases, does this give you a lot of insight into into conflicts today. As you mentioned, with the Soviet Union, the submarines there, that there's still repercussions today. So there's a lot going on, and putting all these pieces together, you kind of
I definitely follow the issues. I stay in touch with Mike. Mike and I became very good friends, and he's been here to the Black Hills, and we talk usually on a daily basis. He writes for an organization called WorldNet Daily. He does intelligence analysis for them, and it's what's called derived intelligence. What you do is take open source information, you analyze it, and then you come up sometimes with a classified conclusion, and this drives some of the intelligence agencies insane. But you can. I mean, open source is sometimes a very good thing to have. It's not all classified. It's not all clandestine. It's the analysis that makes a big difference.
We've only got about 40 seconds left, but given the changes in technology with the internet, I imagine that for intelligence officers today, they're working with the whole. It's maybe quite a bit different from when you were active as an intelligence officer.
Well, it is slightly different, but for example, DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, now has one section that is dedicated just to open source information. It's information we can pull off the internet. It's information we can pull from various sources, and then you use the classified information to flesh it out. It's like building a design and having one or two pieces that you need to complete the design, and you have it. But I do want to invite the public to come to this program on Saturday, not because of me, but because every second Saturday of the month there is a speaker at the Western Dakota Tech here in Rapid City, and these are veterans who have been in wartime situations. And Brad Morgan is a person who, he's a retired English professor from the School of Mines.
Jim, excuse me. I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to cut you off right there. Running out of time.
No, but no problem. Thank
again,
you.
Tomorrow morning, or excuse me, Saturday morning, Black Hills Veterans Writing Group at the Western Dakota Technical Institute in Rapid City. Jim Huff, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you very much.